Anytime you feel like you reached the ceiling, consider that maybe the ceiling is just a floor to something else. My guest on this episode of Passing the Torch is Ian Eichen. He joined the Air Force in the year 2000 and served on active duty for over 23 years. During this time, he spent a large portion of his career developing talent management prototypes at the tactical and operational levels and identifying and testing emerging technologies against strategic problems across the Department of Defense. In summary, he's accomplished a lot and is all that in a bag of chips. Without further ado, Passing the Torch with Ian Eichen starts now. First and foremost, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining me. This episode has been 2 years in the making.
Hey, speaking of celebrating, this is our first time meeting.
It is.
How crazy is that?
It is. I appreciate you inviting me.
I literally just finished up an episode with Lee Ellis, which you got to witness.
Yeah.
And so thanks for, that was awesome.
No, it was good. I mean, it's a hero. Like, you can't interrupt that.
And I only had 30 minutes with him, so I was like, man, there's all these different things I want to get into, get into with him. But I was just honored to have 30 minutes. But I was telling him, in my bag, I have my personal notebook that my to-do list, but within that, I have a podcast section. And I've had this podcast for going on 6 years. In January, it'll be 6 years.
Wow.
And I wrote out a guest list of, and it's like 50 or 100. It's a lot of people. You've been on that list for a while.
Wow.
Yeah. And I know, even though we just met in person for the first time, and then I called you, I don't know, Friday or Saturday or whenever it was last week, but I felt like over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of messaging back and forth about, I felt like our relationship predates this just because of...
That's the nice thing about social media.
Yeah.
You can get to know somebody long before you ever actually meet them, and you can develop a relationship. Doesn't mean it'll automatically happen, but you can.
Yeah.
If you put in the effort, you could actually develop a real relationship. And then meeting in person at some point is just another, piece on that journey. But there's plenty of airmen that I know that I've only met through social media. We've talked for years. I know them. I know their families. I know a lot about them. Still never met them in person. At some point, that'll happen. It just hasn't yet.
No, and we have a ton of mutual friends, one being Sean H.R. Lee. But he speaks so highly of you.
That's a cool guy. No, he's a good officer. I got to hang out with him as a lieutenant while he was a captain, and work with him on a bunch of projects and do some stuff for Syria and Iraq. And we got to do a lot of real mission.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of late nights and a lot of...
This is in Germany, right?
This is in Germany. Yep, we were both at Ramstein. So a lot of stressful nights, a lot of, him specifically developing as a leader and learning how to transition from a lieutenant to a captain, and then getting, DO level responsibility as a captain and having to operate at that level and how to just continue to grow. And so he did amazing, and he's a guy I'd work for anytime.
Oh, 100%. And so he speaks very highly of you. And then one of my close friends, Jake Kearney, Chief Kearney now, he's down at Lackland, but he was, when Sean Lee was a squadron commander, Kearney was his squadron SEO.
Okay.
But hey, I want to read this quote because, well, first and foremost, this is what Sean Lee gave me when I was promoted last year.
Oh yeah, he does that.
He never says nice things to my face. It's always in writing, or he talks trash to my face, nice things behind my back.
Yeah.
But I have this black book, and you heard me talking to Lee Ellis earlier. So I read Leading with Honor as part of a book club. Shout out to Susan Mace. Bought this book, started reading books, writing down my thoughts. Every time I read a book, I take notes on that book. It's full of quotes, but I was going through it earlier or last night, and there's a quote I saw in there, and I thought it was fitting for you.
Okay.
For my episode is, anytime you feel like, and I don't have a source for it, so we'll just credit
the internet.
The internet.
Okay.
Abe Lincoln, I don't know. Anytime you feel like you reach the ceiling, consider that maybe the ceiling is just a floor to something else.
That's good. I wish I would have said it.
Yeah. I'll quote you.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'll
Ian
say it
Eichen,
later.
Ian Eichen. No,
you've
Scott,
said it. Martin Foster.
Martin Foster, Sean H.R. Lee. We'll do Michael Scott. When I do the audio episode or the audio recording, I'm just going to read your bio.
Okay.
Look at that.
That's a long bio.
I did my research on you.
Yeah, I didn't write that bio.
I know, but there's a website that I found that had... I went on LinkedIn and LinkedIn, it just says, but there was a website. Oh, for your company. Is it Elyria?
Yep, Elyria.
Yeah. Well, all that said, I'm not even going to edit most of the stuff. I'm going to keep in.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate it.
You talked about me bringing my equipment out of my suitcase over to my right. And yeah, I'm just going to try to do as many episodes as I can.
You should. You got everybody in one place.
I know.
And everybody's here. They're ready to talk. The meetings are only, you know, mostly on the floor or having discussions. And so there's plenty of opportunity. And everybody's in that mode where they're willing to talk and teach and have a good time. And so these are some of the best places to learn. And the things that you hear will provide value, hopefully, to somebody else. And so if you can capture some of that and keep it for someone else to listen to, it's even better.
Not great. Besides hanging out with me doing a podcast and drinking an old fashioned, please describe why life is great right now.
My life is great right now. So I'm recently retired, and it's not great because I'm retired. I actually loved the Air Force. I had a blast in the Air Force. I did 23 years, but I got out because I had a son in high school who wanted to be at the same high school and was actually doing really well. And so, you know, every military parent kind of understands there's a time where you got to leave. And he's gone with me to so many other bases. We got here to the Pentagon, had a great job, great role here, loved it. And about 4 months in, he said, "Hey, I know we're gonna have to move because we've been talking about maybe moving again. And by the way, we've been here 4 months." He said, "I know we're gonna have to move, but I'm starting freshman year, and I actually really like my school. And so, if there's any way we could not move, that would be cool." That those were his exact words.
What's your son's name?
Caden.
That's really responsible, especially at 14 or 15.
I thought so too. So I immediately turned to my wife and I was like, crap. Like, now we got to actually. Like, that was not a thing I was thinking at the time. Just coming from Edwards, I came here to the Pentagon. Again, was really enjoying my job. I was writing emerging tech strategy for General Brown and getting to travel all over the place. And I mean, it was a great responsibility and a great job. And so when he came and said that, I realized, man, that's rough. He's actually doing well because he'd been homeschooled before that, and this was his first time back in public school for a while. And he was doing so well with it, I realized, okay, now we got to try something. So I started to look at, you know, could I stay here local and stay in the Air Force? And there's ways to do it, but it's difficult. There's kind of a path, and everybody kind of needs to move on that path. And at a certain point, I realized that it was going to be very difficult for me to stay active duty, stay in a single position, and actually hold up that position for other people, because it was a great developmental position. I learned a ton. And so I needed to free that up so that someone else could take advantage of that as well. And so the best thing for me was to get out. And I was actually having a blast. I didn't want to stay longer and risk maybe getting disgruntled or maybe being in a different situation. And so leave while I'm having fun. And where I'm in DC, where, you know, I can actually provide for, you know, for my family and take care of them and give my kid 4 years at the same high school. That was the goal. And so I was able to achieve that goal. He started his junior year a few weeks ago. He's loving it. He's having a great time. And that was the goal. That was the whole reason. And so to be able to do that, that's why life is great.
Yeah, especially in the D.C. area. It seems like it's such a cool place to go to high school and get to experience. I mean, history, when you're studying history in high school, it's like, hey, look out to the window, kids. That's it.
Yeah, but they don't care. He's 16. He doesn't care.
Well, now they can learn the history of TikTok or whatever.
He's not going to understand it till later. But I will say, coming to D.C. and not commuting is awesome. D.C. is a great place to be. Northern Virginia is an amazing place to be. If you don't have to commute and you're not sitting in traffic for 2 hours a day. So, and I'm not doing that.
My brother-in-law, my sister's husband, he's in the Army. 8 years ago, he was stationed at the Pentagon. He lived in Arlington, Virginia, in a place called The Village. Distance-wise, I think it was 8 miles. But it would take him over an hour to get
there's
to
no need for that.
Yeah. So he started taking the metro and stuff. I showed you your bio that I'm going to read for the audio portion.
Yeah, it's long.
It's long. But that's all the stuff that you do. I'm trying to capture everything. But when meeting someone for the first time, how do you explain what you do? Because I've listened to you on different podcasts. I remember when you were active duty, you started the Air Force quarantine. So I've been following you for a couple of years. But you do, in a good way, you do a lot. I've seen you do TED Talks. But yeah, how do you explain what you do?
What I do now?
Just when meeting someone for the first time, because I feel like you're an innovation guy. You're a guy that just a strategic thinker, but more than a strategic thinker, you're someone who puts, like, to me, you are innovation, because in the Air Force, there's a lot of buzz terms, and innovation being one of them. To me, innovation's more than just the idea. It's the action of the plan. You're someone who personifies the action of, like, hey, and if it fails, it fails, but we're going to try this out. But that's just a small explanation. But yeah, but again, you've accomplished so much. How do you explain what you did in the military and also what you do now?
Yeah, I think first off, if you were to come and ask me, what do I do? And I say, my name is Ian. I personify something. That would be a weird way to answer any question. And so I guess it would depend on, you know, if it's here, I say, my name's Ian. I'm at a deep tech startup. And then if they want to talk about that, we'll talk about that. If they want to talk, oh, then they go, why are you here hanging out with the Air Force? Then maybe I'll talk about, you know, I retired from the Air Force last year. But that was that was a purposeful decision that I made when I got out. I wanted to make sure that I held the rank of chief. I held the rank of senior NCO for a long time. It was great. It's been great for my family. I know a lot of people. I've been able to do some things with that. But I don't consider myself, like, retired chief is not the thing that I am. It is a thing that's built me to this point. The relationships and the experience I got are what allows me to do the things I do now. I'm Ian. I'm a father. I'm a husband. My family's still around, so I'm a son. I'm all those things. I happen to work at a deep tech startup. I used to work in the Air Force, and it contributed a lot to my life. And so I really do. That represents a lot of me. I'm not a chief in that sense. It's just the rank that I got to hold. Like, that was a cool thing that I got to do. And so it's still weird walking around here and people, you know, calling me that. But that's just a cool thing I got to do. And now I get to use that to help other people. So it all depends on the context. And so I didn't really answer your question completely.
No, it's good. I'll take it.
But yeah, that's probably what I would say.
I was thinking about that on the drive down here because I told you I had a 7.5-hour drive. So I really just started getting active on LinkedIn. And up to I had a LinkedIn for years. It had my job duties from past EPRs and all that stuff. But I was like, that's not who I am. So I actually changed my profile to say podcaster and networker because I felt like that's what I want to be. That's who I am kind of now at this stage, and how I'm leveraging my rank and my position is to network and collaborate because it provides a platform to help out other people, which to me is something that you've done, whether you were active duty at, was it Edwards or Beale?
I was at both.
Oh, yeah, yep. Yeah, that's right. To your son's, right? Like, you moved around a lot, but... That is, because I remember messaging you a couple years ago. I was like, damn, dude, are you leaving again?
Yeah, so I was at Beale for about 3 years, did Edwards for two after that, and then the Pentagon for two.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just using the platform, because I've met people where their rank is who they are, and they introduce them, even at a random restaurant, you know, they'll be like, oh, I'm so-and-so, like, based off rank.
There's nothing wrong with doing that. Yeah. Everybody identifies differently. And so some people identify as, you know, their sports team, the thing that they love, or their hobby. That's them. Taking away or judging somebody for the way they identify, I could never do. I just don't identify that way. I also don't identify as a fan of a certain football team, and that, even though I am, but that's not how I identify. And that's not the first thing that I would bring up in a conversation, because it's not so important in my life that I need to bring it up in the conversation. And so I think the first thing that people usually bring up is a thing that's very important to them. And you can tell a lot by somebody, you know, by what they do. Now, if you'd asked me that question, I was sitting here in uniform, or I was here as a representative of the Air Force, then I probably would have answered that question differently, because I'm here representing the Air Force. I have this rank and I have this, you know, uniform on for a reason. And so you're not asking me for fun. It's no, I'm Chief Aishin and I work over here and this is what I do. But that's because it's more of a professional environment. But if we were just, you know, sitting next to each other at the bar and you asked me, who are you? Oh, I'm Ian. That's it.
You said a couple of things, that's a couple of key words, but you know, we talked about just identifying yourself. Can you please describe your childhood? And then also, what was your curiosity growing up?
I don't know. The curiosity thing, I don't know. I'm the oldest of six kids. My dad he worked as an air conditioning repair guy. He taught air conditioning repair, HVAC, at a community college. So he did that my entire life. Had a couple of side hustles where he went and did consulting work for air conditioning refrigeration. And then he did, he wrote a lot of the state testing for air conditioning refrigeration and started writing software to help that testing. And so it was like what I would consider like an old version of an LMS to do automatic testing and things like that. So he always had these side hustles, but that's what he did. And so he did that throughout my entire career or my entire life. And then, I joined the Air Force right after I went to college for 2 months. Tried the college thing, realized that I wasn't paying attention, didn't want to pay money to go do a thing that I wasn't really taking advantage of, and the Air Force seemed like a decent opportunity. And so, you know, at the last minute I joined and then ended up sticking around for 23 years. But yeah, we grew up in Dallas, Texas, and oldest of six kids. So I had all those kids around kind of helping them grow up. And my parents divorced when I was, I think, 11. And so a lot of time, you know, single family or single parent and trying to help, you know, take care of six kids.
Now, I think I know we're roughly the same age. I went to college for 3 years and I was...
Oh, you did a little more than me.
Yeah, but then I was thinking I should have joined the Air Force 3 years ago. And I think about where I'd be now. You know, I'd be at 24 years. I'm like, you know, you do the math for retirement and all that stuff.
Yeah, right? I mean, sure. But you're on the path you're on for a reason. Yeah. And, you know, you would have been totally different. If I hadn't have done my last assignment, I'd be in a different position than I am now. If I hadn't have done one before that, like each one of those assignments is what makes you you. So it's really hard to second guess. Should I have done it? Should I have not? You can't control it anyway. And so, I mean, you could waste time thinking about it, but I think, you know, you wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that path. And so it is the path regardless.
As I mentioned earlier, I've done quite a bit of research on you.
Okay.
That's so I have a question. Sure. And so I called a mutual friend of ours. I won't say who. Aishin's going to be on my podcast. What's a question I can ask him that he hasn't really discussed in other podcasts?
Okay.
You're like, you got to ask him about this. But when I say the word handcuffs, what comes to mind?
Oh, he's talking about handcuffs that I had in the office. So you could pick handcuffs throughout. You know, if you're sitting there kind of like a fidget spinner. You know, you're sitting there thinking, you're trying to figure things out, and you just need something for your hands. And so I would have a couple different handcuffs, and you could pick those and try to figure out how to get out of them. So
would you
hope that's what he's talking about, because if it was something else, I'm not tracking.
It is about handcuffs. And I think it's obviously, you know who I'm talking about. But so would you ever have, like, be messing with handcuffs when someone's coming to your office and you're meeting them for the first time?
Sure.
So was there, like, was that like intentional, or was that maybe like...
No, it literally was a fidget spinner. It's okay. I have a hard time paying attention to one thing. You can call it, maybe it's OCD, maybe it's ADHD. I don't know. There's never a situation where it's very hard for me to focus on this one thing and not do anything else. I'm going to be whiteboarding. I'm going to be writing notes. I'm going to be doing something. And so it literally was like a fidget spinner to just something to keep my hands occupied.
No, it's cool. I think just kind of like I envision like a mad scientist type thing, right? Like, hey, I got to just work on stuff.
Or it's ADHD.
ADHD. I mean,
you can call it, make it sound fancy, but it's really just an inability to concentrate.
The reason I say that, because I thought about, I imagine someone meeting you or seeing you for the first time, and you're picking this lock of a handcuff, and you're like, oh, hey, what's going on? But what are your thoughts on first impressions versus lasting impressions?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially even on the civilian world and really everywhere you go, first impressions are important. Yeah. Just because people have an expectation of who they want to meet and are going to meet, and they're going to judge you in a certain way. Being cognizant that that exists, I think, is important. Doesn't mean you change your whole persona. I mean, even I guess, you know, if I wanted to, or if I wasn't having to deal with the first impression, I probably would have worn a polo shirt and dressed a little, and it's not because I don't care. I'd much rather be a little bit more comfortable. Most of the people that I was meeting with today was in a suit and tie. So if I dressed down too much, that could mess up a first impression. So I'm cognizant of it, but I wasn't going to wear a suit and tie. There was no need for me to do that today. And so going above and beyond because that exists is not something I was willing to do in that situation. Now, lasting impressions, you know, aren't going to come usually by the way you dress. It's going to be by lots of interactions. And so you hope your first impression doesn't shut anybody down, and it just keeps the door open to continuing the relationship and the discussion. And if you kind of mess that up the first time, hopefully you can leave a lasting impression by spending more time and expending more effort. But if you want to be very deliberate, you know, trying to make sure that you decide what is the impression you want to leave on people, you know, people you work with, people you work for, what is the impression you want to leave? And hopefully the one, you know, that I've always tried to leave is somebody who's willing to help in whatever situation. Might not know what to do, but if you have an issue, I'll stand there right next to you and we'll figure it out. If I had to put, you know, everything into words, that's the one I would do. But it has nothing to do with the way that you dress, very little to do with the way that you carry yourself, but a lot to do with the way that you approach people in person or online, the way that you, you know, react to them, the way that you make them feel. Those are all very important things that I think you need to be very deliberate about. And so you didn't say which one was more important, because both can be at different times. But that's the way I think about each.
So I actually teach a pro dev on lasting impressions, because I've made so many horrible first impressions on so many people.
Oh, I think
my
everybody
life.
Has.
But I just, fortunately, I've been able to rebound. I've learned the hard way how to make, you know, bad first impressions, but positive lasting impressions. Hey, you talked about, I want to just go down, discuss a little bit of a rabbit hole. You talked about, you know, the suit and tie and like, you know, no need to do that because there's a lot of people who probably, and I probably would be one of those people who would have wore a suit and tie because I would have felt maybe some pressure. But how important is it for people to have that authenticity when in a leadership position, or maybe not in a leadership position, more than that, just like an influential person? But again, yeah, just your thoughts on.
I'd say those are two different things. So if you decided and being, so let's pretend you're in my position and you go, you know what, I need to wear a suit and tie. If you think you need to wear one, wear one. If it's going to make you uncomfortable not to, then the right move is the suit and tie. I don't care that much. There's only a few places I wear suit and ties. And that's usually if I'm doing something in the White House vicinity, Chamber of Commerce, you know, something officially government, not the Pentagon. If I'm in London, because you kind of have to business-wise, and then Paris. Again, it's a business must. I can't walk around in jeans. It doesn't work. There's no way I could even make it to step two of trying to talk to somebody. But you need to pick what works for you. Now, as we get into, yes, you can call that being authentic. Other people could say, well, you're wearing this because it's what you think people want, so it's not authentically you, and that doesn't matter. It's none of their business. Authenticity as a leader is a completely different thing. It could be done in the way you dress, but especially with most of the audiences as military people, they don't get to pick that. And so your authenticity comes in a lot of ways. It comes, again, at the way you approach people, the way that you make them feel, the way that you're there for them, and the way that you follow up. Those are some of the best ways from a leadership perspective that you can remain authentic and still help them. You can, certain times you're going to be in situations, you know, I was a command chief during COVID, and I bring that up to say that there were a lot of decisions that were made that not everybody understood. There are a lot of decisions that we made that we maybe might have made differently now, but at the time and at the moment, it was the right decision for us to make. But we had to be authentic and transparent in, here's what we think. Here's the decision we're making. Here's why we're making it. Here's the other decision that was a little bit, you know, more intrusive or worse, or we thought wasn't as good. And here's what we're looking to learn. Being transparent in that and knowing that we might not have made the right decision, but it's the decision we made, and then reversing it if necessary. I think that's key. Wherever or however you build it so that there's trust there. And even if the airman, the person, whoever it is on the other side who doesn't get to make the decision, doesn't like what you did, they gain an appreciation for the problem.
Yeah.
And this is why we'd go to ALS or NCOA or talk to in our town halls. We did town halls every week. You know, every decision people could ask about. And we would tell them everything. I will always tell you everything that we made, every decision that the general made, that I made, everything we were thinking about, right or wrong, as long as it's not, you know, somebody's medical or somebody's disciplinary issues. Those are the two things you can't talk about because it's none of your business. Everything else is open for debate. General's still going to make the decision that they want to make, but we can discuss it because we wanted leaders, and by leaders of all ranks, to understand the issue and understand the choices that we had available. And then at some point, they're going to look at it and go, I wouldn't have done that. And that's okay. Now they have all the information. So when they finally get into the situation where they can make the decision, they've thought through it. It's not the first time. They can learn from our success or failure and just after action it on their own. And then hopefully when they're in that situation in the future and they're a squadron commander or a chief or what, you know, a leader at whatever level, they get to make the decision that they think is necessary. But they've had 10 years to think about it or 5 years to think about it and learn from good or bad that we did. And so I think that's another piece of being authentic is just being very transparent and very open to criticism.
That's tough. I mean, that's scary for people to be open to like criticism stuff. But I like the way you said, like, hey, people have 10 years to think about it, because that's why even this book, like there's been things I wrote down in the moment, and then even over the past 2 years I go back and reference my black book. I'm like, oh, I went through this situation 5 or 6 years ago.
And well, it's amazing what you think about things when you're ignorant, and people use ignorant as a word that's they've got a negative connotation around it. Yeah. Ignorant just means that I don't know what's going on. I don't know about this. I'm ignorant on a lot of subjects. The first time I learn about it, I'm a little less ignorant, and over time I become less and less ignorant until I become knowledgeable. That transition doesn't happen. It's not a switch. You don't one day become knowledgeable. But over time, you hit a sliding scale. And at a certain point, you're knowledgeable enough to make a decision. And the quicker you can get to that, the better. Understanding where your gaps are and then filling that gap with knowledge, with experience, with someone else on your team who might have that knowledge or experience, I think is key. And so you have to be very aware of what you know and what you don't know and where your limits and boundaries are, or you're just going to make some terrible decisions.
You have been on numerous podcasts, a few of which I listened to over the weekend and even on my drive down here. In a 2021 podcast, you mentioned that you had a current MySpace account. Right, it's a two-part question. First question, why? Why in 2021 did you have a MySpace account?
Yeah, so I was actually, I was speaking at ALS, and so I was on all social media that my airmen were on. I wanted to make sure, you know, everybody always talks about having an open door. Well, I did have an open door, but as a squadron chief and a group chief and then a command chief, technically my door was open, but it doesn't mean I was there. And then sometimes it was closed because I was in meetings with other airmen or chiefs or, you know, I was doing things. And so, yes, the door was open. I'm always available, but I'm not always available. Social media, I was. So if they emailed me, it could get lost in 100 emails that I got that day. Very few of them, you know, to me. But if they sent me a message on Reddit, I'm going to see it. If they sent me a message on Facebook, I would see it. So I'd always give out my Xbox Live. If they sent me a message on there, I'm going to see it. And at one point, I was telling everybody that, and they were like, why don't you have a MySpace? And I was like, no one uses MySpace. They're like, no, it's coming back. I was like, okay. So I went online, and it wasn't coming back, but there were people on it. And I was like, fine. So I had a 412 Test Wing Command Chief MySpace page. And if anybody wanted to reach me there, they could reach me there as well. And so it was really just trying to, they laughed about it all the time. And so it was, I think it was beneficial to have. But there were a few people that did reach out and I was able to help them with some things. And so, you know, it was really just, it's hard for me to say, hey, come talk to me, but come talk to me in the way I want to be talked to, in person, in my office, during duty hours, when I'm there. That's really hard to do. Each one of those is a barrier. Each barrier I can remove, it gives me a better opportunity of meeting and talking to that airman, and especially when they're in a time of need. Hopefully, they reach out when they're not. But if they are, every one of those barriers could mess things up. And so if I can make it where, well, it doesn't matter if you're on my base. It doesn't matter if it's duty day. It doesn't matter if you know where my office is. It doesn't matter if I'm there. It also doesn't matter if I'm on the thing that you know, if you're on the thing that I'm on, instead, I'll go to the thing that you're on, and I'll just be there. I don't do a ton. You can go to the MySpace page. I think it's still up. There's not a ton of posts, but it's there to make sure that if anybody needed it, it was there to reach out to them.
Staying on the subject of MySpace, if you had a top 8 and it was only based on leadership ability, who would be in your top 8?
Top 8 leaders? It was music. We had a lot of, well, they had a lot of those too. So you could still put music back on your new MySpace if you want to.
What was your song?
Oh, there were a lot of them back then. This was late 90s, early 2000s, so it was a lot of alternative in some country. I can't even remember. Top 8 leaders, that's a good question. Yeah, you're going to have to give me a rain check. Let me think about it.
Because I want to say on this question, so maybe not necessarily leaders, but hey, if General Brown comes up to you and says, hey, Ian, I need you to build a team, you and 8 other people, military people. I'll throw in some civilians because, you know, civilians serve too, and civilians are great leaders. But just 8 people, you plus 8 other people, who's on your squad?
What are we doing? Yeah, it means something. Like, there's a lot of good people here, but they're not good at everything.
To solve a hard problem set.
What kind of hard problem set?
Innovation.
That's not a thing.
How to connect with people in a socially connected world. How everyone's so close today through social media. Actually, we'll say leadership ability, but in terms of who's a proper leader, who has great poise, who's a great communicator, who's consistent. And I think consistency is an underrated. I once had a mentor of mine talked about one of the best compliments you can give to a leader is being consistent, because he referenced a commander that he once worked for. When every day when that commander walked into work, the exec would give a thumbs up or thumbs down, gladiator style, like thumbs up, hey, this person's in great mood today, right? So, he talked about, hey, that person, when they were on a thumbs up day, it was awesome, but it wasn't consistent. It was like, what are we getting that day? But in terms of consistency, thoughtfulness, connection, poise.
So here's the thing. As soon as I name a name, I'm not naming another name.
Okay.
So giving names is difficult.
What about historical figures then?
Well, no. I don't want to sidestep your question. Okay. I think I'll give you some examples. Okay. And I think, so I had a DO back when I was in special tactics who was a driver. Like, he jobbed it more than anybody I'd ever seen. He had high expectations for everybody. He was really tough to please. Very nice guy, but you probably never did things good enough. And very rarely would you get it good enough for him. So it's hard to please, but everybody tried all the time to make things better. In the end, that was the most efficient well-organized squadron I've ever been a part of. And it was that way throughout a lot of really nasty real-world deployments. And the squadron just performed. He was actually a very nice guy, great with families. And so it wasn't a bad guy. He was just very hard to work for. He was very demanding, but it was consistent. And he was like that with everybody. It wasn't a thing that he did with enlisted. He didn't do it with officers. He did it with people. He always expected people to rise to his level. And his level was always getting better. And so he would, you know, he would outwork you. He was smarter than you. And it's not that he told you these things. He just was. Like, he's one of the smartest officers I've ever met. Hardest working officers I've ever met. Fastest runner I've ever met. He could PT anybody in the squadron. He was just a beast in every sense of the word. And so because he talked the talk and he could do it, he wasn't making you do, hold it. He wasn't holding you accountable to a thing he didn't hold himself accountable to, and because of that, we were a very efficient, well-run squadron. As a leader, I'd take on my team anytime, even though he was very hard to work for. Still, an amazing leader, and to this day, I still use him as an example. I've got plenty of examples of leaders that didn't like and didn't, you know, didn't work well for me or the airmen around me, and you know, leaders at all levels. But anybody who will work hard, who will hold themselves accountable, just like they'll hold you, and makes you better, I think is a good one to have on your team. And so, again, not me sidestepping your problem, but I can't start naming five, you know, random chiefs here, and then five other chiefs get butthurt about it because I didn't call them out. But you'll know it when you see it. People who are consistent with their communication and have actually practiced to make sure that what they are communicating is, back to your point, authentic, and there's a reason for it, as opposed to standing up on stage or standing up in front of people holding court because you like to hold court. That's a different skill, and it's not one that I normally look for. I want people who are going to go and solve problems, and if we need to communicate to help solve that problem, then awesome.
When I was fortunate enough to be selected for promotion a couple of years ago, you know, it was kind of like the Slumdog Millionaire, like when the guy has all these flashbacks at different key points in his life. That's what I had, like a flashback to at that point, 20 years of my career, with all the people who helped shape me. And it was more than just like shaping me over the course of a year or 2 years or 3 years, but there'd be various specific instances, right? Like that moment in time where when I think of like leaders, it's more than like, oh, this person. It's that person in this moment on this day.
It's always a moment.
Yeah. And we talked about, so my top eight, our mutual friend, I won't say his name again because I don't want to give him that satisfaction.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
But my stepdad, who I was very close with, he died unexpectedly on October 15th of 2010.
Oh, wow.
It was out of nowhere. And I was stationed in California at the time. My mom and my stepdad were in Oklahoma. My mom called me. She was like, hey, this is it. You got to come home. And right. This is at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning in California, and we're 2 hours behind Oklahoma. By 6 a.m., I was on a flight. I drove down, and LA is 3 hours, right? So I drove down to LA, caught a flight. I was able to make it home in time, like probably like 15 minutes before he passed away. But I say all that, not just for sympathy, but I felt compelled to, and we didn't have unclassed computers really, so everything we did was on. Right. So I had to go to work to put it in my out of office. No one asked me to do that. But I typed up this long, and I didn't want to text anybody. But I went to work at two or 3 o'clock in the morning. Actually, on my way to LA, I remember I typed up this email, and I was like in flip flops and, you know, just travel clothes. And I saw that lieutenant, and he was like, what are you doing here? And, but we had like this great heart to heart, and, you know, he was just very supportive. And at that point, I really didn't know him that well, but that's really kind of like what he stepped up in the moment as a 24, 25 year old snot-nosed, lieutenant, but
just good people.
Good people. But I always think about it's those things really when I think about, who would be on my A team or, you know, something like that. You know, I've referenced a couple times about, I know you've done a lot of things with strategy, and I know you did TED Talks and a couple other things, but how do you turn insights into strategic direction that drives value for leadership and companies?
Yes, it's a pretty broad question. I think you end up doing this a lot. I found myself in these situations where you see things. You spend enough time digging into a subject, and maybe it's more than other people around you. And again, maybe it's because it's an ADHD thing, or you get focused at 2 a.m. But you end up getting really smart at one thing, and it allows you to see through tea leaves that other people can't see. You know, everybody, you know, if you look at everything you know, you're the only person who knows what you know. And it's a mixture of your lived experience, your learning, your education, has nothing really to do with an actual degree, but just the education that you've learned through all these cycles of just going through life. And so at some point, you know things that other people don't know. And because of that, you gain insight. You get to see things are coming. And sometimes those are related to emerging technology or strategic change, or, you know, there are people who saw that GWAT was moving and we were going to be in a near-peer competition. You know, you can look up AFA 10 years ago, and there's a lot of near-peer talk. You know, Pivot to the Pacific was going on, I don't know, 2011, 2012. You know, it's when we were all going to stop focusing on GWAT and we were going to move into the Pacific. And so these are these phrases that people use to kind of to push strategic guidance. What ends up happening is and you'll see it in business too. So I'm in a deep tech company, which means the people that I work with have been staring at these problems for 30 years. They are world experts at these problems. And so what ends up happening is normal people, really smart people who just don't study these problems, are here. These guys are here. They're PhD level with PhDs. And so I'm using that as a phrase, but actually as a real term. They've studied this thing for their entire lives. They can see things that the rest of us can't. So they're trying to tell you about this future, this world that to you is just science fiction, but to them is real because they've been doing it. But you're still here. And whether it's being in the Air Force and trying to convince people that this emerging technology is the way forward, or, you know, we have to start looking at the way that we deploy capital as an organization. And so we were pushing for the last 2 years really hard to get the Air Force and the OSD to look at capital and economics as a information operation, as a warfare. You can have economic warfare. You can use the economy and you can use your capital deployments to actually wage gray zone warfare. You can do it with information operations. We finally got to people to think that way. But you can do a lot of things that are not kinetic, but can still cause dilemmas for a near-peer adversary. So if I said those words and you've heard it for the first time, I've been thinking about this for a long time. You're still here. So I've got to take all these things that I know and all these things that I think. And the first time I try to tell you, I try to tell you this thing that took me a PhD to learn, and you don't get it. Well, you're not going to. The thing that took me 20 years to learn, I can't explain it to you in 10 minutes. And so most of what you end up doing is going on an education campaign, educating everybody around you in the way that they need to be educated. Just like you want to communicate in the way that they need to be communicated to, you have to educate them the same way. And so you have to find a way to take really technical things or really deep strategy or whatever it is, the thing that you think you know well, first bounce it off a lot of people, because just because you think it's right doesn't mean it is.
Yeah.
We all make, you know, mistakes with it. But get them not from here to here, but get them from here to here. And get them from here to here, and then spend on session three here to here. It's an education. Even, you know, some of the things that, you know, there's going to be people here at the conference talking about quantum. If you've never touched quantum, it's weird. Quantum physics and quantum states, it's a hard thing to learn. It's hard for quantum scientists and quantum engineers to understand this, optical engineers to understand this. And so you think in one session, 45 minutes on the floor, you're going to learn it, and it's not going to happen. And so what your job half the time is as a leader of any organization, whether that's a business organization or a military organization, but if your job is to influence and inspire people, you have to take all these things that you know, that you've learned, that you're really smart at because it's your lived experience, and distill it down in a way that they can take. And maybe it's focusing on one or two things. Maybe it's focusing and teaching it in a way that they understand, but your job is to educate. And then when you finally get them to the point that they're educated to the level that you need them to make the decision, then help them make the decision. Because if not, it's just you coming down from above or from the side or from out of their area and making decisions for them. And so we had this same issue with artificial intelligence in the Air Force. This is why one of the first things, so we built an artificial intelligence strategy for General Brown. And one of the key things is we said, if you're going to use this, at some point, we're going to be automating things. So you're going to automate things that most people do now. An airman does this, or a leader decides this. Now we're going to automate it. That's not going to just happen. In order to make that work, they're going to have to trust the automation. And they can't trust it if they don't understand it. And so if we want to get to a point that we have trust, we need to have transparency behind our algorithms, transparency behind our data, and education for our airmen so they know what these words all mean. You can't just put all this science fiction in their face and
get
them
point.
To believe it. And so it's an education process. This is why we partnered with MIT. There's an MIT AI accelerator. This is why many people across the Air Force, probably at least 1,000 by now, have gone through different levels of AI training because education became a key component of our emerging technology strategy, because education leads to trust. Trust leads to actual implementation, and at some point we can get automation. But it's a long process, but education comes first.
Okay, I want to stick on education because I'm very passionate about enlisted education. So, and to me, education is more than what happens inside of a classroom or going to college or whatever.
Yep.
So what 2 to 3 books do you recommend based on education?
What are you trying to learn?
That's a great point, because usually, so I've been asking this question a lot in podcasts. I know you listen to a lot of podcasts too, because I think we talked about that the other day. That's a common question, like, that people always ask is like, hey, what 2 to 3 books do you recommend? But that's always a general question. So typically I always ask, for example, I had a communication expert on a recent podcast, and I asked her, I said, hey, what are 2 to 3 books regarding communication do you recommend to people? Or, oh, for Chief Toberman, I asked him, hey, what 2 to 3 books based on reflection and connection? Or Shane Pilgrim was someone else I had on a podcast recently. And for him, I said, hey, what 2 to 3 books do you reference or recommend to people based on transitioning out of the military and entrepreneurship? So for you.
So I'll go down that list. So your Shane Pilgrim episode was awesome. You know, he talked about Last Man in Babylon. That's a good book. He talked Millionaire Next Door. Yes. That's a great book as well. I would add, I think Creativity Inc. is a great book. I think it's a great business book, but also a creative business book. It's the story of Pixar and essentially how you'll see a big Buzz Lightyear on the cover, but it's a story, and it's one that I would buy for senior NCOs and chiefs that if you went to Edwards and made those ranks, you probably got this book.
What about Culture Code? Do you like that book?
It's fine. Yeah. And it's not me going against it. It's just I like... There's a lot of good books out there that are very inspirational, and you can get some good quotes out of them. Sometimes it's really hard to take that book and get real next steps. Simon Sinek, for instance. I love all his books. They're very repetitive at a certain point. I actually got to the point with his books, I was like, I don't need to read the last half of it. Yeah. Because it says the same things. Now, it actually, at a point, got me to going, I don't know if this guy knows what he's talking about. And then I met him. And I was gonna interview him, and I was like, hey, here's all the I'm gonna give you my questions. And he was like, no, I don't want to see your questions. I just want to be fresh. And so I was like, cool, I respect that. And so when I asked him these questions, and they were all questions that I had thought very long about. These were things I was dealing with. So selfishly, I got to interview him. So I was like, I'm gonna ask things that I want to know.
How long ago was this?
We had him on QU.
That's right. Yeah.
2021, and then I brought him out to Edwards. Or excuse me, we had him in 2020 on QU, and then 2021 I brought him out to Edwards. Every question I asked him, he thought for about 10 seconds, and he had one of the most eloquent and insightful answers I'd ever heard, and he came at it from a completely different way that I had never thought about, even though I had paid attention to all these questions and thought about them long and hard. And they were great, and they had next steps in them. And so sometimes when you get into, or I find when I get too much into the insightful books and the motivational books, I feel good, but I don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
And so I like taking those and then adding them with another book that has more next steps. And so if you got into one of the ones that I would buy for people, and I give away a lot of books, but there's a whole series called Slideology, Resonate, and Data Story. It's by the same author. And they're all on building story arcs. And so Slideology is literally how do you build presentations that inspire. Most of what we do is build presentations to elicit some sort of decision. Sometimes it's inspirational. Sometimes it's trying to get the commander to decide something. But how do you take a very well thought out story and build that into your slides? Data Story is the same thing, but it's mainly with data. So how do you take, and it's a very easy book to follow. So how do you take statistics and really refine data and turn it into a way that can create insights for others? But Resonate is, instead of just the slides, like these all build on each other, it focuses on the story itself and how do you build ideas that capture people's attention and use those ideas to then move forward to whatever you're trying to do, whether it's inspire or teach. And so for communications books, those are ones that I really like. There's a couple advertising books on the Ogilvy Advertising Agency from the Mad Men Agency, essentially. And so they've got their own book that was written about all the different ads they use. And you can get really, I'll get geeky into the ads themselves and the typeface. There's a book that I give out to people called Type that's all about different typefaces and fonts and how different types elicit different responses. There's a elegance to type, and there's an elegance to font and an art to it. And if you simply use Arial because that's the one that was there, then okay. But when you're presenting, there should be a reason for the type that you've picked. And I think it was weird for my execs the first time I asked these questions. You know, why did you pick that font? And you know, how did you want this to make you feel? And what response were you trying to elicit? But those all mean something. Same with the colors that you use and the style that you use to do all this. So communication. Those are the books that I would recommend. And those are the ones that sit on my shelf and I'm handing them out to many, many people.
I love it. So I'm a communications major. So,
oh, okay.
And I think I'll start including on some emails I send out to at work. I send out, I call it, in addition to face-to-face mentorship, I do digital mentorship where I type up emails and just about a certain subject. It has nothing to do with work, but it's kind of like reflection. But it's interesting you talked about the font, because I 100% believe like that matters, right? Like the font that people use. And so I do a lot of writing, and I type out questions for each podcast, and I'm very specific on the font that I use.
Yeah, why'd you use this font?
This is American Typewriter.
I know. Why'd you use it?
There's something about it. I like the old. So even like we have old fashions. You talked about advertising, Mad Men. Mad Men, I was obsessed with that show. One of my favorite shows of all time.
It's a good show.
And people talk about how can you, sexist and all these different things. Like, well, it was the late 50s and 60s. Like, they're just reenacting that time. But I loved more than that. They did a lot of things I disagreed with. But the things I loved about the show was the detailed writing. But the nuances, they captured New York City, like the fashion and the social, social events. There was just a whole style, and it was very classy. And as I'm building Passing the Torch, I go toward more, I like, whether it's sports logos or as I'm building logos, I kind of like simple classic designs. Or when I'm when I was building different logos, that's what I type in. Hey, I want a retro or a minimalist or a simple classic modern look. But there's just something about, I feel like it puts me in a zone. It's the same reason why I write in cursive in my book, and I write in pencil. I used to write in pen earlier on, but there's just a mindset. I feel like it kind of like when people have like their separate workspace, like, hey, yeah, this is all it's, right? Or their own garage gym. Like, it's just when you step out there, you're in a zone. There's just something about, even when I type papers, or when I did type papers for school, I use that font, unless they said use Arial or Times New Roman or whatever. But yeah, there's just something about the font that I look, that I like. I alternate between the questions. I'll have black or the bold and, non-bold. Just to me, it professionalizes it. I like it.
The cool thing is that answer is the right answer. There actually is no wrong answer to that question. And I would only argue that the only wrong answer is, I don't know, it's the one. It's the one that was there. Now, if that's okay if that's your answer, but it means that there was no thought put into it. And so in the end, the thought is, I'm trying to elicit a certain response, and for this is your notes, but you deliberately put something for you to inspire you, to make you feel a certain way, to make things easier for you. So you did all these things for a reason. You picked the font and the size and the typeface, and not everybody realizes that those are two different things, font and typeface. And even get into the kerning and figure out what kerning are you going to use for this font as opposed to this font. It's an attention to detail thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying people who don't have that attention to detail, aren't thinking. It's just, there's a story that you're trying to tell. And you can even get into this. I used to go through a course, and we would, I don't know, I'm sure you've read the Iliad and the Hero's Journey.
Oh,
and 100%, yeah. So when I write EPRs, I write EPRs to the Hero's Journey. So I do the entire journey of a hero through the EPR, or at least that's my attempt. It can't always happen.
But you're trying to tell a story.
I'm trying to tell not only a story, but there is this tried and true method called the hero's journey that we teach for communication. And that is how you introduce a character. You walk them through their background. You walk them through the challenges and how they overcame those challenges. And that's something I try to do for all the airmen that I write for. And so whether it's a 1206 or an EPR, the hero's journey and that cycle is the entire thing. And if I can do it right, and I've done it a few times and it just worked that way, actually every bullet has a story arc, and then the entire thing has a separate story arc.
Man, I would love to see Hardesty's EPR.
So there's decent ones out there. It's hard. I helped him with his narrative one, this latest one. This is my first one with narratives now that I'm out. It's a little harder there. But even my, before I would write 1206s, and they wouldn't let you write in sentences or in paragraphs. And so every bullet was a sentence, but in every sentence in order told my story. And this is the nice thing I got to do as a chief, because I had no chief above me to say, you're not allowed to do it that way. And we had awards win over and over and over again because I told a story. And it's especially hard when you're teaching, again, education. I'm trying to say, I've got this person that I've stared at for a year. They're amazing. I know they're amazing. I've seen everything they've done. I've seen all of their triumphs. I've seen all the valleys they've been in. And I've seen them overcome it. And now I'm trying to take a piece of paper and tell all of you guys who've never met the guy or gal, never seen him, know nothing about what they do. And I'm trying to convince you that they're better than anybody you've ever seen. I'm not going to do it with straight bullets, with action, impact, unless I deliberately tell the story. And so the hero's journey, again, why would I recreate that? Like, they've done it. It works well. So my job is to take these things that are tried and true and use them as a way to tell you, these people who don't know the person that works for me, that they're amazing. And I think it's a good way to do it. And so I'm not successful with every single document that I write, but that is the template. That's the guidelines that I use, and that's the starting point. And I only deviate from that when I have to. I only write acronyms when I have to. If you look at Hardesty's, if you look at his EPRs from me, there might be two acronyms, and it's probably NCO and something else that you've
GPA.
Heard of. Yeah, you've heard of a million times. I don't write any. I had one, I think, in my exec before that, because it was a medical thing and I couldn't get by without it. It was like 10 lines. It was so long I couldn't write it without the acronym. But I don't need you to know these acronyms. I need you to understand what this person did. And every time I write an acronym and every time I use some sort of idiom or colloquialism that only I know or only my base knows or only this AFSC knows, then I lose you as a reader. My whole job is to take you as a reader, board member, awards board, or promotion board, and get you to understand the thing that I get to see every day. So again, I take this, I create insights with it as we go back to the insights question, but insights in a way that you understand as a board member. So wargaming the board and what AFSCs are on the board and what is the likelihood of it being this AFSC and what language do they speak? And so how do I turn this into their language? It's very deliberate. To make sure that the people get recognized for the amazing things they're doing.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I love the story thing because that's what it should be. It's just, like any good superhero movie, like there's going to be you're telling a story. Like that's why the movies are 2 hours, right? There's the, or even if there's a trilogy.
Oh yeah, 9 hours.
Right, yeah, the first one's the origin story, right? And they're developing the villain and all these different things, but then the third one is is how they always became triumphant at the end.
But you don't have that. You just got like 12 lines.
I know.
So how do you do it in 12 lines?
Oh, it's been a challenge. Hey, I want to transition some lighter topics, more fun topics. This is all fun, but just kind of miscellaneous questions. Have no order or sequence, just random that I was thinking about. I also have, I think, 10% less left on my phone. This is good. It's great conversation. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
What are you world-class at that people might not know?
I don't think I'm world-class. I'm pretty good at French pastry.
Really?
Yeah. You go back to the OCD thing. So I go into these phases where I need to learn how something is done, and I spend 5 months doing only that thing. Until I'm done and feel like I know it well enough, and then I switch. There's 6 months of, pizza dough, and now I make pizza dough every Friday, let it rise, go through the entire time, fresh pizza dough. For a while, for probably 3 years, it was French bread and French pastry. And so it was lots of different French pastry.
The family loved this, I'm sure.
Yeah, they get to try all the good and the bad. And so, you start with brioche and you move on to macaron and then you move on to different breads and different flours. And so you just get really deep into it. And then at a certain point, I know it. And then I move into other things that I cook. Cheeses for a while, like make lots of different types of cheese. Like those are, lots of that kind of stuff.
Somewhat on the same plane, if you were to give a TED Talk on a subject for which you are not known for, what would it be? And it can't be the French pastry, but I know you've done a TED Talk before.
Yeah, I did that one. That was more on, it was just Airman doing awesome things, and I got to kind of watch. What would I give a TED Talk on? I think it's it's hard to do into a TED Talk, but taking very complex subjects and trying to distill it in a way that anybody can understand. Not really a TED Talk. It's probably more back on the skill. But yeah, that's what I would do.
Two last questions. What do you believe to be true that you know to be true, but you cannot prove it? For example, for me, I'm very staunch in my belief that I'm a right Twix guy. So in a package of Twix, they do taste different to me.
Mm.
So I'm very hard on this belief. I won't fight people for it, but I'll have a spirited debate. But that's just a generic example. But what's...
I think the last bite of a lot of things aren't as good as the first one. And so most of the time it's not worth doing.
Hot take.
Because it's like a tiny piece left.
Save like the last bite's like the best bite.
No. And then it was funny. So I used to do this a lot. And it was a weird habit. And then the other day, my kid, he's 11, and I was getting his plate, and he had all these chicken nuggets, and he had the last bite missing out of all of them. Or the last bite was still there. I was like, hey, why didn't you? Because normally he eats them all. And I was like, why didn't you eat these? It's a waste. And he goes, it just didn't seem like it would taste good.
Okay.
I can't fault him for that. I did the same thing for a long time. So and I've never said these words to him. This is a thing I did a long time ago. But I've been with my wife for a long time. So it's something rubbed off on him. But yeah, the last bite's not as good.
Yeah, that's good. Something for me, something else for me is that, you know, speaking of food, is it's hard for me not to judge people. Like, say, like, if we're at a bar and we invited, like, you know, hey, come meet us, you know, and I'll have some nachos. Or if I'm eating nachos and I'll offer some to someone. There's always that nacho that has, like, all the perfect toppings.
The one nacho.
The one nacho, right? And you always save it till last. But I've been to places where, like, or I've been around people when I said, hey, you know, help yourself to some of my nachos. They immediately go for that one first.
Yeah, they suck.
Screw everyone else and all the other nachos. And it's just like, it's hard for me. Like, that's all I need to know about that person. That's the only impression I need.
Yep, terrible leader.
All right, last question. If you could put a billboard anywhere in the world and write your message on it for the world to see, where would the billboard be and what would your message say?
Yeah, I would probably put, I'm breaking your question. Your premise, but I'm keeping your premise. I would put one on the outside of all of these military bases so that people see it and realize that there is more out there than just the military. And this isn't like a disgruntled retiree. It's really easy. And I think every retiree will tell you this. It's really easy to get so busy in the day-to-day of helping airmen and leading and hacking mission that it's sometimes hard to look out. It's a bubble, and not in a bad way. It's a bubble. It has to be. It has to be a very insulated bubble because you're doing really difficult things. The nation and your airmen ask you to do things that no other job does. And so I don't think it would work any other way. But one of the byproducts of that is you do get into this bubble, and it's really difficult to get outside of it. It usually takes some sort of weird situation. You know, I didn't get outside of it until I was able to start doing a couple internships at other companies and interacting with people who just thought differently, who were not inside the bubble. They didn't live there. And you start to see, oh my gosh, I can affect national security from the outside. Like, this isn't the only place. There's ways for me to serve other than active duty. There's ways for me to take care of my family. Like, all these things that I thought were truths. And it's mainly because I never questioned them. I finally realized there was another version of that. Amazing people who were serving in their own way, and they had never touched the military. They didn't even really know about it, but they were helping national security in a way that was much more powerful than even what I was doing. I had to get out of the bubble for a minute to see it, and then once I see it, I was able to go, okay, what are the things I wanted to do with my life? And helping airmen and increasing national security were the two things, and there's other ways for me to do that. And actually, in a lot of ways, I can have more impact on the outside because I'm not limited. You know, I can go talk to Congress if I want to. I'm not limited by rank or perceived station as far as you're here, so this is what you're allowed to say. This is your level of worth. Your worth and your ability only comes from whatever you do. And at a certain point, based on a first impression, they'll let you in the room to do these things. And at a certain point, you'll ruin it and you'll leave. Or you'll continue and you'll be able to do great things. But it has nothing to do with some sort of preordained list or chart. And it takes a little while to see that. I'm incredibly grateful for the military because everything I have now is because of the 23 years I served and the airmen I was able to serve with and the leaders I was able to learn from. And because of all that, I'm finally in a situation where I can help, you know, airmen from a different point of view, help them as they transition, help them understand, bring technologies in that maybe they didn't know existed, and help national security very directly instead of being in a large organization where it's tough to move things. In a very small, nimble organization, we can move much faster. And so in certain ways, I'm able to impact more. But I'm not able to interact with airmen on a regular basis, and this is why things like AFA, this event, other events that I get to go to. I was at a senior NCO induction I got to speak there a couple weeks ago. It was amazing because I get to kind of fill my cup from that other side. That was my long answer to your question.
No, that's great, man. Well, that's all I have. Ian Eichen, thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Man, this is really cool. And I think, I mean, my recorder says 1 hour, 7 minutes and counting.
By the way, I'll say that was a good old fashioned, but the last sip is not as good as the first one. So it's proven my point. It's still good. It's not as good, though.
This has been a learning. I appreciate this is so much. You know, someone at AFSA had asked me, like, why am I doing my podcast? I don't make any money from this. I mean, I spend money on this, but
this isn't cheap.
Yeah, I mean, and I appreciate you recognize the equipment and everything, but I do this because I'm genuinely passionate about it. But this is helping me build my network and get the message out. So I did that podcast. I did 15 interviews at AFSA, and I'm still going through posting. But the last one I just posted, my most recent episode, was with Shane Pilgrim. And I tried something different. I posted that one strictly to, I think, only LinkedIn. I might have posted it to Facebook.
I think I saw it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, but I haven't really posted a whole lot on there. But the, like, the reach that it has, and it shows that. And I've actually had people like message me directly about that, like, hey, you know, I like what he said about this or that. So it's just it's a connection platform. It's a networking collaboration. So, and you're someone who I've been wanting to build a network with and collaborate with for a long time. So, just thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you having me on. So, I mean, this, you know, I had my own podcast equipment. This equipment is not cheap. And then for every hour, you know, you just did an hour here, that takes time to schedule. You've got pages of notes. So that took time. It's not done. You get to now edit and go through that process. And so the fact that you're spending, you know, 10 hours or 15 hours of work to put out 1 hour of content, and even that's being a little pessimistic. It could have been, you know, double that, based on your commitment. But what it ends up meaning is you're able to capture something. You now have an artifact of this moment in time, dumb things that I said, good things that I said, maybe. But you have this artifact that can be used to help others. If it was for you, you'd record it and you'd watch it yourself and you'd learn all these great things from all these cool people like this, the POW you got to speak to earlier. But by taking the time and energy to record it, it's your dedication to everybody else. People, you have no idea who they are. But you're saying, you know what? I'm dedicated to helping make you better if you want to be better, or to learn something, or to get an experience, or to hear somebody that's different. And that's a level of commitment and dedication that I think is huge. And so when you start looking at, you know, who do I want on my team, is people that are going to do things like that. People that are going to be selfless and are going to be able to look past what's in it for them and what's good for them, and saying, I have unique access and placement to, you know, people like this author and some of the other people you've been able to interview. And I think that knowledge is valuable for someone. I just don't know who. So I'm going to capture it and take the time to do it. And that's a level of commitment that you don't always see. It's commendable. And I thank you for that.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. All right, everyone. That wraps up this episode. Big thanks to my guest, Ian Eichen. My outro is going to be very short on this one. So remember, vision, relate, develop. Take care, everyone. Foster out.